our own White House correspondent, John Decker. He's not over there to see Bjorn Borg. I think he's talking about Sweden Sweden joining NATO. I love the McEnroe Netflix series, though, where Borg is over in Sweden on his modest lakefront home talking about the rivalry. Yeah. But Sweden now in NATO, and Vladimir Putin amazingly got reelected.
Yeah, amazingly, right.
Take it away. How is it, John?
Yeah, I can. Here I am in Stockholm, and I can see you rolling your eyes, Jack, when you talk about Vladimir Putin and his very difficult run for re-election in Russia. Of course, his fifth term as Russia's president. No surprise here, just like there's no surprise in the rest of the country. But I'll tell you, they are so pleased, the Swedish people, to be a part of the NATO defense umbrella, the 32nd country. Joining NATO, of course, they applied to become a member of the NATO Defense Alliance after Russia's illegal invasion of Ukraine's sovereign territory more than 2+ years ago. And Sweden brings a lot. They bring a very sophisticated defense industry. They manufacture high-class, world-class fighter jets and tanks, those tanks, some of which are being used by the Ukraine military. And they're very much concerned about Vladimir Putin's intentions beyond Ukraine, perhaps into NATO territory. That's, I think, the major reason why they wanted to become a part of the NATO Defense Alliance.
Yeah, and people don't know the history of, if you go back to the Cuban Missile Crisis and how important the NATO positioning was, for example, of some missiles or rockets in Turkey when it came to Kennedy and Khrushchev negotiating an end to the Cuban Missile Crisis. So NATO is a very thorny hotspot for Putin. It's obviously the thing that really gets him stressed out. So I think it's pretty big that Sweden was added. I know it just seems to me that the whole NATO alliance and the ability to kind of help check this war in the Ukraine is really a hot button point in the world.
Well, it is. And, you know, it sends a strong message to Vladimir Putin. I don't think that he could have in any way predicted that you'd see an enlargement of the NATO Defense Alliance when he entered illegally into Ukraine back on February the 24th, 2 years ago. But that's exactly what's happened. His actions precipitated that, because before that, Jack, there was no great clamor for Sweden to become members of NATO, or Finland for that matter. Finland shares a 700-plus long mile border along with Russia. So I'm sure for them that's a little too close for comfort. But that, too, sends a very important message to Vladimir Putin.
Now, are you in Stockholm?
I am. I'm in Stockholm. Arrived on Sunday. Depart tomorrow. It's my second trip that I've made to Stockholm in the past 5 years. Beautiful city, beautiful people, so friendly. They love Americans here. So that's some place to put on, you know, your list of potential destinations, a place in Europe that loves Americans.
Before I let you go, because in England they're still worked up over Princess Kate and the pictures or whatever else, where she spotted it. But what are the hot button issues in Stockholm? How's the economy? And what is the perception looking back at another matchup of Biden and Trump? You say they love Americans. What are the 20,000 foot Stockholm observations of American politics?
Yeah, that's the reason I'm here. I had two speaking events. You mentioned royal family in the UK. One of the guests attending one of my events was a member of the Swedish royal family, Prince Daniel. But they are fascinated by this rematch between Donald Trump and Joe Biden. Lots of questions. They're fascinated in the same way that America is fascinated. And look, they are very much familiar with Donald Trump, you know, from the 4 years that he served as president. So there's a lot of interest in this upcoming November election. And that's, I think, one of the reasons why I got so many questions from the people attending those two events that I took part in.
Hey, your cell phone nickel from Sweden. Before I let you go, you are one of the only White House correspondents who's an attorney, member of the bar, also for the Supreme Court. What's your just real quick take on this story of the $464 million bond issue in New York with that trial with Trump? Unable right now, not a slam dunk to come up with almost $500 million with some lenders who don't want to, use collateral on your terms. Do you think this is going to come to like a forfeiture of property, a showdown with the attorney general? I mean, is there going to be negotiated, settled? What's going to happen here?
I don't know. And there's the clock's ticking on that. There's just 1 week before Donald Trump needs to be able to post that bond associated with that civil fraud judgment issued against him. And we saw what the New York State Attorney General Letitia James has said. She says that if he does not come up with that bond, then she would proceed with selling off, acquiring through disgorgement, the assets to satisfy that judgment. So a lot's on the line for Donald Trump, for the Trump Organization, and the clock's ticking because it's a week's time before he needs to come up with that bond payment.
All right. Thank you, John Decker, live in Stockholm, Sweden. Thank you, John.
That's right, Zach. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Michael Graham joining us, NH Journal. But the thing is, I'm wondering, in Massachusetts, is this gets more traction, the story of the Haitian migrant who allegedly raped a 15-year-old girl in Rockland, Massachusetts, who was developmentally disabled recently. And Healy basically saying, well, it's unfortunate these things happen, but we have a good system in place. That's basically what she said. Is there any outrage in Massachusetts over their own governor in this position? Because I would think that if people got enough oxygen into their brains, they'd realize that this is that she's on the wrong side of an issue here. Take it away, Michael.
Yeah, when you're the elected governor of Massachusetts, Mara Healy, and so you're asked about whether this violence in the shelter that you run means you need more vetting, and your reply is, well, it is unfortunate from time to time. Things will happen. And I don't know describing the rape of a disabled 15-year-old as a thing that will happen, particularly when it just happened in January, Jack, not a year or two ago, this past January, another, in this case, an illegal immigrant from Haiti, who had an ICE warrant out for him, was released by a local judge after he allegedly raped a disabled girl. So here's the way the story rolls out. New Hampshire Journal has been asking both Joyce Craig and Cindy Warmington for their position on the Sanctuary City bill and their response to what's happening in Massachusetts, where literally right now the state Senate is considering a more than $800 million bill to fund migrant housing for next year. They're already hundreds of million dollars in now. And you've obviously already seen the crime and the shutdown of community centers. So do Craig and Warmington support the same policies they have in Massachusetts that have drawn these illegal immigrants? And their answer is no comment. So yesterday, Kelly Ayotte, who's running for governor's Republican, released a statement saying Craig needs to dump the endorsement she got from Carrie Healy over her rape happens response. And the response from Craig was no comment. So then the Boston Herald jumped on this story because it involves their governor down there, Healy. Mm-hmm. And the response from Craig was no comment. So the theory is that Joyce Craig, Mayor Manchester, former, is going to try to simply muscle through the next 8 months on the biggest issue in American politics, which is immigration, with no comments. And it's an interesting strategy. As they said in Dodgeball, bold move, Cotton. Let's see how it works out.
You know, Michael, I find it interesting that as some Democrats, not all, but some Democrats in the state Senate right here in New Hampshire are basically, and I asked Senator Donna Soucy a week or so ago ahead of Joe Biden's visit to New Hampshire, previewing the trip for the Biden-Harris campaign, what are the two top issues, Senator Soucy, do you see this fall here in New Hampshire, particularly with independent voters who will decide things like the governor's race, the presidential stuff? She said the economy, you know, like kitchen table stuff, which I think is probably a right answer, and abortion rights, which is probably a right answer, but no mention of immigration, no mention of the border, no mention of what we were just talking about. And then I said, do you think Republicans are trying to make too much of the illegal immigration aspect? And she said, I have to listen to the tape, but I think she said yes. So you're seeing this incredible down-the-middle dichotomy of Democrats who are not bending. They think sanctuary cities are good. They think that people being too mean and extreme when it comes to these cases like the rape of this young girl, what we have in place is working. And then I'm looking at the average person going, I don't think they're going to buy that this fall, are they?
Well, once again, we'll see. That's why you have campaigns. But the New Hampshire Democratic Party has doubled down on their opposition to enforcing immigration, you know, additional enforcement. They don't support any additional enforcement actions, whether it's the Sununu program at the northern border or whether it's sending state officers down to the southern border, and of course the Sanctuary City bill. And what's interesting is that state senators like Shannon Chandley and Becky Whitley are going out of their way to describe the people who do support enforcement as either racist or bigots or inhumane. And so when Chandley was asked to vote on the ban on sanctuary cities, she said, quote, "Would I have spoken up against the persecution of the Jews during the build-up of World War II? Would I have defended my Japanese neighbors from internment camps? Would I have raised my voice to oppose Jim Crow laws?" So the Democrats are arguing that if you oppose sanctuary cities, you're a racist Japanese interning Nazi. And that's a pretty strong strong argument. Meanwhile, on the Republican side, both Ayotte and Morse are being 100%, "We oppose sanctuary cities." Morse today said that based on Maura Healey's dismissive comment about that rape, she shouldn't, you know, forget endorsing or not endorsing. Maura Healey should step down as governor of Massachusetts. Now, I'm assuming that Maura Healey isn't going to take a memo from Chuck Morse, but that shows how, as you pointed out, Jack, the two sides have chosen very clear alternatives. There is no middle ground here. Lou D'Alessandro, the most moderate Democrat, says no to sanctuary cities. Hmm.
All right. Thank you, Michael, NAJournal.com. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you.
Alicia Preston, Xanthopoulos, Seacoast Online, APX, joining us live this morning, and thanks for helping us out on Friday, APX. Talking about when J-Dog and I started this morning of this Princess Kate scandal, the royal scandal, whatever's going on, you are a royal correspondent right here. Now, you love this royal stuff. So what is happening, APX?
I am I'm a royal file. By the way, I'm a Haagen-Dazs girl, but the husband likes Ben and Jerry's. So allegedly and reportedly, Kate was sighted, Kate Middleton, Princess Catherine, at a farm shop yesterday. And there's a little bit of video of it, but a lot of people are skeptical because she is one of the most watched people in the world, but certainly in the UK. And how could a camera not actually just catch her with all the paparazzi following around trying to figure out what's going on with Kate? She hasn't been seen in 2 months after a quote-unquote planned stomach or abdominal surgery. And so there's a lot of skepticism on the internet about whether that was really her or whether it was staged in some capacity because of all the rumors swirling. And I will say, from me, my perspective, I am not a doctor, as we all know. But what ailment when you are one of the most public figures in the entire world? You're the future queen, and the current king has cancer, and it's pretty serious. He's not even part of public activities.
What with the king? Is it prostate? What does he have?
They won't say.
Okay, keep going.
They won't say.
Keep going.
It was during a look at his prostate that they discovered the cancer with some tests afterwards, but no one's saying if that's what the cancer is. But you have a responsibility, and you haven't been seen in 2 months. And what ailment could you possibly have that would keep you in hiding at a young, healthy age for 2 months? And that's a big question. And not answering that is leading to all these rumors out there.
So they kind of haven't handled it really well.
No. I mean, yeah. Jack, you tell me, what ailment could a young, healthy person have that would require them to be 2 months?
Can I point to a really bizarre, similar analogy of not a royal family here, but the defense secretary, remember when he went in for privacy and he had a complication and he went back and forth to the hospital a few times? Alicia, I don't know, but it was supposedly abdominal surgery, and I have had friends who've had simple hernia surgeries for a repair, and you get these incredible infections. I have no idea. I mean, you know, I don't ever hazard a guess on the medical stuff, but certainly it could have been handled more transparently or better, is your point.
Right. Well, and again, she's not just, and it's unfortunate. You married into the royal family. You married into the royal family at a level where you're going to be queen.
Yeah. There's no hiding the public eye.
No, and there shouldn't be. You do have a responsibility to the public. And I don't believe the rumors of William having an affair with a neighbor. I just want to be on record there.
Oh, is that another one out there?
The one out there, she was actually, because Stephen Colbert mentioned it, I think, on his show, she actually came out yesterday and said it's not true because people were saying what really happened is Kate had a mental breakdown because William was having an affair with this woman who actually is a neighbor of them in Windsor or something. But
kind of like Tiger Woods with his wife there when she found his phone. Well, you know what? I don't know, but I guess that's what they have to do over there. Hey, let me switch gears completely because you have a pretty commonsensical eye. Put this under the category, because you've known me a while. Is it just me? And I always stand to be corrected. I really do, especially by people like you. I don't know. J-Doc sometimes yells at me, but I have thick skin. So here's my question. Joe Biden doesn't come to New Hampshire for 2 years. We don't matter. We're not a good representative state. Take away our primary. Thank you for writing me in. So he just came here, as you know, on a presidential visit. And this afternoon, now the First Lady is swinging through New Hampshire a week apart. I don't believe in coincidences. Are the Bidens looking for condominiums or a home here? Is they have a newfound appreciation that New Hampshire matters? What is going on?
You know, I don't know. I keep wondering, are they putting New Hampshire back in the swing category? Is that what's going on here?
I don't know. I'm asking.
I don't know either. I mean, you know, Trump has never won New Hampshire, but are they looking at something, or are there people looking at something that says we need to shore up New Hampshire? It could swing. But here's what I say to President Joe Biden. You called us racist. You said we had no value in the process because of our racism and lack of racial equity. That is quite, and he may not have used those words, but that is what he said. Mm-hmm. New Hampshire isn't white enough for him to be on the ballot first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For him to be on the ballot of the state being first. So that's what you told us. And you have the audacity to come back here and be like, okay, well, let's be friends again. No, bro. And I hope people remember what Joe Biden did and said to the Granite Staters in his process.
Well, again, I put it under the category not to just try and make something out of nothing, but I don't believe in a coincidence. And when you're the president of the United States, you just said royals over there have obligations. You don't just move Air Force One around lightly, and you come here for a full presidential visit a week or so ago. Now the First Lady's swinging through. That's not, I don't think it's like they're trying to say we're sorry for the primary. I think they're worried about New Hampshire being in play and 4 electoral college votes.
You know, like I said, it is possible that they're looking at numbers that says New Hampshire's back in the swing category. I would be surprised based on 16, 18, 20, and 22.
I would too.
But it could change.
To your point, Alicia, they should not be worried about New Hampshire at all. In my opinion.
So,
but I don't think they're just coming here to look for you know, a home in North Conway. I don't see it. Hey, I have one other one for you. So we're, you know, a number of months away from November. Mm-hmm. I don't want to rush it. Spring is ushered in tonight. We have a presidential election coming up. We have a gubernatorial election. And I'm looking at even the issue of the southern border and immigration, legal or illegal, hot button issue, even that is divided right down the middle. You have Democrats saying the Republicans are just trying to make a big deal about illegal migrants who commit crimes. Nothing to see here. Move on. And don't use the term illegal. Call these folks undocumented, including the guys in Massachusetts that Governor Healey sort of says, well, it's unfortunate, but stuff happens. Okay, rape of a young girl again. It just happens. So I'm looking at even immigration being divided down the middle, politically speaking. So I guess it comes down to abortion rights, the economy, people's income aren't keeping up with prices. And I think the whole border and immigration issue is a hot button issue for independent voters. And Democrats seem to be digging in and doubling down. Nothing to see here. No big issue. People don't care about the border. They don't care about immigration. Am I right? What's going on?
On the immigration issue, here's what I think, and this isn't about any particular politician at all, certainly not a particular one in New Hampshire. This is just in general. I think both sides are using rhetoric that goes too far, and it is amplifying the issue. I think on the far right, they're using very discriminatory and bigoted language on all immigrants, and I Donald Trump does not help that, and I think that is bothersome. Because most of us believe in a proper legal immigration system and in asylum for those that can properly be monitored and checked in the United States. And then you have the far left, who is saying anything and everything. And their rhetoric is leading us people to believe they really do just want an open border. They really do not want to have to worry about it. I don't think that's true. But these far left and these far right voices are gaining all the attention, and it is making this issue far more divisive.
That's excellent. I can't disagree. I don't think anyone with common sense could disagree with your analysis. But how does the issue cut politically? Because you know and I know, other than two wars going on in the world that could change by then, because there's no ceasefire between Israel and Hamas yet, Putin just amazingly got reelected against a lot of opposition, ha, 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 in Russia. Ukraine's still going. So we don't know if foreign policy will will be a bigger issue. But domestically, let's face it, inflation, the economy, you can tell me all day long things are getting better, but people don't have enough money each month to live, most people, paycheck to paycheck. So that continues to be an issue. Abortion rights are going to be a huge issue here nationally. Anyone who has an R next to their name, if you were running OSHA, I don't care if you're pro-choice, pro-life, if you're a Republican running in the 1st Congressional District from Hampton, they're going to say you favor an abortion ban. They're going to run ads all day long that you want to ban abortion even if you don't want to. And those are going to – but I think this immigration issue is getting worse, not better, because we don't even know how many people came in here illegally, if you will. You're seeing cities and places like Massachusetts right next door, right down the road from you. They can't handle the people here. It's getting worse, and no one has a solution. And I think people are fed up with it. I think people do want an accountability. They want to know who's here. They want people to play by the rules. And the other thing is, if you come here legally, no one talks about becoming an American legal anymore. Isn't that a novel concept? No one talks about, and when you come here legally, get a green card, work, do it by the book, play by the law, come here legally, go through everything, become naturalized, you don't get a debit card or a daily allowance or free housing. So I think this issue is going to cut. I'm just wondering, with independent voters, who's better on this, Biden or Trump?
I don't know where the independent voters will come down on it. And I don't know because, look, the answers aren't easy. And because it's 2024, and it has gotten worse. It absolutely has gotten worse over the last few years. But because it's 2024, we always act like something's new. We have had a serious border problem in this country for 25 years. Mm-hmm. 25 years. And no one, Republicans or Democrats, have successfully done anything about it. So if you look historically, the answer, what do we do? And the answer is, I don't know. You know, in I don't know if the politicians do. Is putting up a giant wall going to solve it? I don't know. They seem to find a way in. What we do need is more Border Patrol agents. We need more tracking. There should be a stay in wherever policy.
I'm sorry. This is a great discussion this morning. You're asking for solutions. Why is it Tennessee and Georgia and even New Hampshire sending guard troops down? A lot of times you don't want to see guard, National Guard, and military used for a civilian. But a border, this is a national, international crisis. Last year, number one cause of death for young people in America was a fentanyl poisoning overdose. It's coming right out of Mexico on the two cartels. So why doesn't the president, if you want to do something, send more? Why is it states sending National Guard? What is Biden's reticence for sending the guard down there in numbers, especially where you have 4,000 or 5,000 people crossing each day?
I don't know. I mean, if that's the solution, then send them down there. But the problem then becomes, okay, so we send people to the border. What do we do with those? We have laws that would have to change. That's what I think a lot of people aren't talking about.
Okay.
There are laws that once they step on land, we cannot push them back over. So, I think people are forgetting to have this discussion. The laws need to be changed to enforce some of these things. Because otherwise, if they step on U.S. land and they declare asylum, there is a process that kicks in.
And if they break the law here in a sanctuary city, no bail, you're released. Hey, listen, great discussion this morning. APX, Alicia Preston Xanthopoulos, Seacoast Online, seacoastonline.com. Check out her written and spoken word. Thank you, Alicia.
Have a great day, guys. Bye.
Good morning, New Hampshire, powered by Sig Sauer. Now, back to Jack Heath on the Pulse of New Hampshire.
You know, I always look at trends, and sometimes we get so caught up in the day-to-day, we don't. But artificial intelligence, certainly not going away. I also saw a story on robotics. Do you know in Japan how advanced they are in the robotic stuff? I'm not talking about industry like our automobile manufacturing now. A lot of it is robotic. I'm talking like manufacturing, engineering. I'm talking like household stuff. And the day's going to come, folks. I'm not telling you to invest in these companies, but the day's going to come when an older person can live alone, even if they have some issues, because they're going to literally maybe not have a pet like a dog or a cat. They're going to have a robot living with them that will do things in the home, like, go turn on a light, go help them do laundry, get them. And so I'm looking at artificial intelligence and robotics with a keen eye. I know people like Elon Musk are, too. Aaron Rial, NBC News Radio national correspondent, looking at it on how industries and, business, if you will, is adopting it more and more in everyday use.
Jack, I have something very funny to add on to that, Japan and robotics. So real quick, my husband and I went on our honeymoon in Asia, in Thailand, and we stopped in Japan on the way there on the layover. Mm-hmm. And in every single bathroom, like in the airport, and they have bidets, like just attached to the toilet. And I'll never forget my husband coming out and being like, "We're barbaric in America to still use our hands. Like, how are they so far ahead of us in this thinking?" And it goes to your point, yes. Robots can do it all in Japan.
I thought you were going to say that there was like that. I don't have one, but, you know, friends, you know, that little automatic vacuum cleaner that will go around your house, like the little thing,
right?
On the floor.
Yeah, the
Roomba. I thought you were going to say there were like robotic, you know, janitors in each restroom. All right. But AI, it's pretty mind-boggling. I've talked to some attorneys that are part of big firms, and they say that, no, you know, I don't want to get paralegals nervous, but if you're buying land or opening a corporation in Delaware because of tax laws, you can have AI do all the research, and the paralegal may not be needed. I mean, we're going to see in healthcare, we're going to see a lot of displacement and adjustment, aren't we?
All of them. Let's start off with brokerage. Everyone has been freaking out this week because the National Association of Realtors basically it has upended the commission structure for brokers, but that might not be the biggest threat. A well-trained AI, that bot would probably be better, more reliable than human brokers, most of them at least. And that's according to NAR's own research. Apparently, there's 2.8 million American licensed brokers. And they said in a 2015 report, quote, "Most are untrained, unethical, and incompetent." This is what they're saying about their own people. So an AI-trained broker is going to be able to forward clients' listings within seconds of them appearing. It's going to be able to collect all the documents and the payments needed for closing. It's going to be able to answer questions in a conversational style. Only thing you can't do is open the house, but electronically that can be done. And frankly, if a robot can provide 80% of the value at 1% of the price, you better believe that a lot of Americans are going to embrace this. I'm just bringing up real estate. Things of this nature exist, like you gave with the paralegal example, in all sectors. And if anyone thinks outside of truly early childhood care and elder care that this your job can't be replaced by AI, all I can say is, you know, bless your heart. It's coming for everything, radio included. And that doesn't necessarily mean we need to live in fear. There's ways that this will help create more productivity and make things better. But I think pretending that it's not going to affect almost every sector and touch everything would be silly.
And it really is. And by the way, technology can be good and bad. It can have positives and negatives. But how much have we seen technology, when you try to stop it or slow it down, you never can, right? I mean, the one inevitable thing is technology. I mean, we've talked about driverless cars forever. You hear these horror stories, and but our cars today, if you touch the line, it vibrates, it will beep, it moves. And, mm-hmm. you know, pilots, the Air Force is looking at pilotless planes. I mean, you know, I don't know if you saw the new Maverick Top Gun. I could watch it every night, but that's just me. But when Ed Harris plays the Admiral and he's mad at Maverick for doing the flight tests, and he said, you know, the day's coming where we won't need jets with guys like you flying them, basically. So it's pretty wild. Of course, we already have drones. All right, Aaron Real, NBC News Radio National Correspondent. Thank you, Aaron.
Thanks, Jack.
Rory O'Neill, NBC News Radio National Correspondent. That's kind of appropriate. Rory remembers Perot, and he also has a pretty good wrap-up on D.C. stuff. Rory?
Yeah, Jack. And also on that no labels thing, there was another tweet from Vaughn Hilliard over at NBC this morning adding, so he's got Cheney, Hogan, Kemp, Christie, Mitch Daniels, Sununu, McRaven, Sinema, Deval Patrick, Cuban, all saying no to no labels, so leaving them with few options going forward. Going forward, though, in about 2 hours, an important congressional hearing from two retired generals talking about the withdrawal from Afghanistan. The testimony includes General Mark Milley, the former chair of the Joint Chiefs, and General Frank McKenzie, the former head of CENTCOM, Central Command. Both are expected to say the White House either ignored or went contrary to their suggestions about the most effective, safest way to get out of Afghanistan.
Yeah, you know what's a lot going on, Rory. Hey, I just have to get the Rory O'Neill take on what do you think the ultimate outcome is going to be between the showdown, not in Vegas, the showdown in New York between the Attorney General and the Trump legal team on that
$460 million.
Yeah, almost a half a billion, like this lottery ticket that's up for grabs. Trump's folks having a hard time getting collateral to get the bond. Where does it go? Do they actually start seizing real estate? I mean, what do you think happens?
I think they do, or at least they'll try to. Or I'm going to see Donald Trump in line at 7-Eleven tonight trying to pick up a few tickets for the Mega Millions. But bar that, I think they are going to have to start taking some action. I mean, unless someone like Elon Musk steps in and says, I'll cover them, you know, or they find some other Republican billionaire to take over.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting one. A lot of craziness. Rory O'Neill, NBC News Radio national correspondent. Thank you, Rory.
Thanks, Jack.
All hands on deck. Portsmouth Elks Lodge, great organization on the Sagamore in Portsmouth. Great location, great lodge. Folks like Mike Griffin, Margaret Culp doing a wonderful thing there for veterans. April 6th, they're going to have a great celebration. Liberty House out of the state's largest city, 20th anniversary. And if you're not familiar with Liberty House, they're a great transitional housing and support group for veterans, great physical location in the state's largest city. And Jeff's been on before, one of the folks who runs Liberty House, and wants to preview a little bit. 20 years in the making, fun event coming up in the Seacoast. So we want to get a jump start on this. Jeff, good morning, and thanks for your work and what you do for veterans at the Liberty House. Take it away, Jeff.
Good morning. Thanks so very much for having us on. I'm here with Ashley, our operations manager, and we're very excited about the 6th. 20 years, we have almost going on 500 residents that we've had over those 20 years here at Liberty House. So we're real excited to celebrate that milestone.
Well, can you, before we talk about the 6 and how public can help, can you talk a little bit, both of you, or however you want to do it, Jeff, your ball, I want you to have the time, take your time. Break down the services at the Liberty House and how veterans can learn about it. You mentioned the number, but tell us exactly, frame the picture for folks who've never seen or been there, what you do, the services provided.
So I think the hallmark of our program is twofold. First and foremost, it is accountability. We are a true sober house. And secondarily, it's intensive case management. So while we don't provide the clinical work here, what we do is we have two case managers who are extremely good at what they do and very involved and engaged with our guys. So our guys are not allowed to just sit and watch TV. They are required to work. They're required to take care of whatever baggage, I guess, they come in with, whether it's fines from courts, whether it's gaining new skills for work, whatever it might be, it's real important for us to be able to get them moving in a positive direction, really rediscover their purpose for being, move towards employment, and then eventually moving on to independence, full independence.
Yeah, and you know, it's such an important mission. Because sometimes I've learned veterans just need that little support. It's not a handout. It's a hand up at a corner or a crossroad. So I think it's important. And it's so wonderful. Now, how can people learn if they qualify or what they have to go through other than sobriety? What's involved, Jeff, if a veteran or a caregiver want to find out if they can spend some time there? And do you also provide a home, if you will, even if it's not for residential living, but where veterans can come by and just talk with fellow veterans for mentoring and, you know, whether it's job counseling, things like that?
Absolutely. They can speak with any of our residents, current residents, or our case workers. We also had a food and clothing pantry. We have about almost 300 visits a year to that last year. It's just incredibly busy, and unfortunately, given the economic environment currently, it's just even more challenging for a lot of our veterans, especially those who are on fixed incomes. But really, as I said, it's all about most of our guys certainly have lived in barracks, operating bases, wherever they may have been in the service. So they're very used to congregate living, which is one of the important features of what we do as well. It's not all about the staff, but it's really to a large degree about the camaraderie, the accountability with which they hold each other accountable. And so that's a big part of it. The community that we really work to try and create here at Liberty House is essential.
And how many? 20 years. Talk about that in the making. 20 years and what's coming up on April 6th.
Absolutely. Well, Ashley's been our longest serving staff member, and she's been on almost 8 years. I've been a little over 7 years. Our two case managers are currently a 2 or 3 years service, which is a long time in this field. And we've had a number of people, Zeke, who I think you're familiar with, served for 15 years here. So there's something very rewarding about working with our veterans here at Liberty House. It's just, it's captivating. And so on the 6th of April is when we want to celebrate those 20 years. We're inviting some of our prior staff members, some prior residents, and it will be at the Elks Lodge. As you mentioned, Marga has been so helpful with us. The Elks do an awful lot for our guys, and so we really appreciate them allowing us to host the event there at the Portsmouth Elks Lodge. We're going to be having some a plated meal, Orchard Grill, who we appreciate. Silver Arrow Band will be a swing band, so it's a roaring 20s theme, dressed appropriately, and there'll be a lot of dancing. We'll have Jeff Chittister as our MC, who I know you know well, and is just a fantastic supporter of Liberty House and MCs all of our Veterans Day breakfasts. So it should be a really good time, we hope, for everybody.
Well, it's a fun and Ashley, can we hear a little more on you and what draws you to the mission there?
Yeah, so I've been with Liberty House coming on 8 years now. I think what I love about this program is how it continues to evolve. When Jeff and I first started, there wasn't too much structure here with the program, and I think just over the last 8 years, we've really put in a nice four-step model. It allows our guys to really settle in and stabilize, and then it's a great jumping-off point for them to really drive. So to watch the guys come in and succeed over their year here is just, it's incredible, and it doesn't make you want to leave.
And Jeff, Ashley, how many folks, how many veterans benefit a year? Did you say 500 or?
We've had over 500 residents live with us over the past 20 years. Okay. Annually, we have anywhere from 20 to 30 that live with us. They stay with us for about a year, but we constantly, like recently, we just had three guys graduate. We have a fourth coming up in April who's actually graduating the program. And so as people graduate, we have new residents come in.
Website, and where is Liberty House located? And is it part of Catholic Charities or not?
It is. We are a program of Catholic Charities. So we dissolved the prior independent nonprofit. Our board of directors, when we were independent, saw the advantages of being in this new big building. We went from 3,700 square feet to 16,300, 9 beds to 18 beds. So it's just infinitely better. And I have to say Catholic Charities has been really supportive and an excellent partner in this. But yes, we are a program of Catholic Charities.
Again, and where's the physical address and location in Manchester, the state's largest city?
Yeah, our new location is at 221 Orange Street in Manchester. And people can find us on the website, libertyhousenh.org, or on Facebook, Liberty House NH. They can stop by or give us a call anytime.
And if on your website there and page, Ashley, if I'm a veteran or a caregiver, is it an application? Is it an easy process to find out? Or do you prefer a veteran to come by in person or call? Or how best to make contact with you?
There is an online inquiry form, so people can fill that out. We do always encourage people to come in. You get a much better sense of the facility, the staff, and the program in person. So whether they start the process online or they just pop in, either way, we will get them in to kind of chat with us in person.
All right. One more time, the website, Ashley?
LibertyHouseNH.org.
Thank you both very much, and we'll get you on before the 6th. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.